All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Todd Cochran, and you are hanging out with us here on Saturday morning. It's the Saturday Morning Tech Show, and we're in Google Hangout. We've got a number of our esteemed colleagues that were with us at CES 2012 are on board. We've got Andy McCaskey and Cold Elkhart, Indiana. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Yeah, well, it's not all that cold. I think it was 14 here this morning, and as you know, it could get a lot colder.
14. Mike, good morning. How are you? Oh, we're not hearing you, Mike. We'll come back to you. And we got Steve Lee. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. Well, I've got the CES crud, so we're going to try and get through this.
You've got the you know, I'm on the recovery mode from the crud as well. So it's I'm past the I guess for a better word, the hot and cold flashes. Now it's just the you know, dealing with the post nasal drip, which sounds disgusting.
For a while, I thought it was just age based, but it's not.
And we'll come back to Mike. Mike, I don't think we hear you yet. Are you? Yep, something's not right. And we've got Don in basically, I think he's on in image only. Don, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
And we're doing good. I think we'll let you try to get your video activated here. But it's been a few weeks since we did a Saturday Morning Tech, and everyone's had a week to semi-recover from CES, and the question is, has everyone recovered?
Well, now that you guys are talking about it, I've had one of these things where I just can't get warm, you know? And so that maybe I missed the fever stage, went right to the chills.
Well, I think it's a function of that 14-degree weather, Andy, not it's a matter that you're cold.
Oh, no, I'm being the house and cold. Yeah, so it's...
Do I have a microphone now?
Hey, Mike, you've got a microphone. Good morning. How are you?
We have video yet for me?
Not from you yet, Don.
It was 0 degrees here, by the way, so I think wow. I got the coldest temperature.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes you the winner.
I guess.
It's 85, and I'm sitting here in shorts, so I just love it. Well, I tell you, I want to take just a second before we get into things to thank our sponsor. The show is now sponsored by Audible.com. And of course, Audible's a leading provider in audiobooks, digital spoken audiobooks, matter of fact. And it's a consumer service that allows users to choose audio versions of their favorite books. They have a library of over 85,000 titles. And, It's a great product. It's one that I use. And matter of fact, sometimes I get behind. Do you guys ever get behind in picking up your Audible books and then they warn you that you're going to lose a credit? I've done that
every month
because I'm always wait for the cool stuff and holding on to credits. But right before Christmas, I burned through 3 or 4 and got caught up. But great stuff. And we've got a great deal for you. We're going to give you a trial here by being able to go over and get a free audiobook and a 14-day free trial. All you got to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/morningtech. Again, audiblepodcast.com/morningtech. And let you know what's funny is on the episode we had last month, I was talking about Audible just a little bit. And I had 4 or 5 people email me from this show saying that they had tried Audible for the first time and were pretty jazzed with it. And then they were able to actually give those as a Christmas presents, digital Christmas presents. So it's kind of cool.
I'll have to dig around here. I think I'm coming up close to 10 years as an Audible subscriber. And I've just really been thrilled with it.
Well, it's a, of course, I'm coughing in everybody's ears. So I, you know, I need one of those kill buttons and studio here is not set up for it. So Mike, are you all recovered from CES?
Yeah, I think so. I was definitely a zombie from Sunday through about Tuesday.
You know, I think even Andy and I were talking when we were there on Saturday, we both kind of felt like, oh, you know, it was one of those types of deals where we're, for a better word, just kind of out of it, you know, and
we're up and moving.
Yeah, we were alive, right?
And you thought you were okay, and then you kind of sit down and you say, I think it's about time for a nap.
So
I think people really understand the amount of work that's involved. It's just not a matter of showing up and shooting video, but you know, you have all the logistics of getting there, the setup, the show itself, the breakdown, the teardown, the departure, and then all the post work that's required.
And speaking of post work, we've got a lot of that in process. Andy's getting his butt kicked by his video processing and good old Final Cut. I tell you, Andy, what you got to do is you should have got in on that Audible upgrade when they were offering all the Final Cut people that were upset about the Final Cut upgrade. You know, I got in and got the Premiere for just a couple hundred bucks, so that was a great savings. But that's normally not that cheap of a package.
Hey, well, I've got a son-in-law who's a professional video editor, and he was not happy at all. Courtney was not happy. And so I had really kind of just hung back, figuring that, you know, we could, I had a couple of licenses for the Final Cut Studio, you know, the light version of Final Cut, and we were working along on that, you know, reasonably fine. But Final Cut Studio doesn't like the codec that JVC Cameras uses, for sure.
Well, it's just MOV format, so it's one of those, and it's supposed to be, it's designed for Final Cut. Yeah.
The codec inside of it is what it chokes on.
Oh, Rob Greenlee's joining us from Seattle. Are you snowed in, Rob?
It's actually starting to melt now, but yeah, it's been some snow on the ground for us here. I haven't actually left the house in about almost a week now.
That's awesome.
I know. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that is awesome. So what have you been doing? You've been telecommuting to work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I've got everything I need to do or to actually work from here. So I don't really have to go in unless there's some meeting or something like that I have to attend.
Well, that's nice. Well, we got Don. You have video. You're here.
Yay. It took me a minute or two, but okay.
And in life and in living color here. So, Don, you know, you were just in town for a few days. I know you had to blast out for, had an appointment and stuff, and we'll catch up on that later. But how's it been since you got back from Vegas?
I've been fine, busy, and everybody's finally had a great surprise birthday party for my wife, which was awesome.
And cool. So I tell you, did I get through the whole stack? I guess so. I guess I got through. So I guess, you know, what I want to do is just take a few minutes, start with Andy, and, you know, what was your impressions then of CES this year? What did you feel was great? What wasn't great? What would you wish would change? Or
yeah, I think that we didn't have quite as much of variety as we maybe had had in years past. And I know that sounds kind of strange over 2,700 exhibitors or whatever. But almost each year, I would stumble across a product. Oh. Like, man, I got one of those. To the point where I go back and actually order it at night from the hotel room or get on the list. And I didn't have that experience. This year. So I don't know whether I didn't get out enough or what the story was.
So Don, you've been to CES in the past, but you know, not from a coverage standpoint. What was your impressions in the time you were there?
I thought everything was quite busy, given the economy. I thought there was a ton of new products, and I thoroughly enjoyed the whole experience.
Do we lose Don?
Back. Did I lose you?
Oh, where you're? Go ahead. You're back.
You know, one, I think the buzzword that I wasn't expecting in terms of products was two things. One was the cloud, the cloud, the cloud, the cloud, the cloud. There were hundreds of products in the cloud. And also the headphones. My God, I don't think I've ever seen so many headphones and earplugs in my life. And the other thing that was just odd to me is that, and Mike mentioned it, that as we were walking through, there was like, and I'm not exaggerating, maybe 150 different vendors that had iPod or iPad cases one after another. I think I mentioned it to Andy once, and I'm like, how do they all stay in business? It was polka dots, it was wood. We had one guy that had a platinum case with platinum in it. I mean,
actually, Courtney was so impressed that she is working on a show called, I can't remember what the exact name is, like the Case Logic, the Case Show. Or on the case or something like that, where the whole show is just going to be product reviews on cases.
Well, it definitely was a lot more, I term it crap. You know, there was just a lot more, and they were spread out. They used to be congregated together, so you could kind of avoid them, but that wasn't the case at all. We got Lou just joined us from the Lou Trek show, and he says, hi, TPN.
Hey, Lou.
So I want to move down here to Mike. Mike, what did you think of the show? And is there anything in there that stood out for you?
Well, being my first time going to CES, I was just amazed at the sheer scale of it. You know, I always knew that place was huge, but I've never seen it full. And that was part of it. The other thing, as you said, the crap that was out there, I mean, you know, iPhone cases and whatever, that's fine and dandy. I mean, you know, it's just like painting your car, but, you know, there's, you know, all the different paint colors. I guess you could have all the different case colors. But there was things, you know, like we actually, a couple of them got through to our booth interviews.
Yeah, they missed the two of them snuck through for sure.
Yeah, well, one that really got me was the mice that look like cars. And, I guess it's cool for a 12-year-old, but I didn't see the point. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just me being old fart. But
That has turned out to be one of the most profitable items and most popular items that Phil May has on his Gadgetplex store. Is those racer, the car mice. I mean, it's like, yeah, I think part of the problem is by age, we're not kind of like into the fashion side of things. And so that's an element that a lot of these manufacturers seem to be glomming onto.
Yeah, and that may be why all these iPhone case manufacturers are still in business. Because, you know, I don't care what my phone looks like as long as it works and doesn't run out of battery halfway through the day.
Oh, Courtney accessorizes, you know, she wants a different, she wants a different case to match, you know, whatever outfit or whatever she's going to be doing.
Well, I haven't changed my case in a couple of years. So Rob, you were watching from afar. What was your, and you got to see a lot of other people's content that we probably didn't. So how'd we do?
Well, I thought that the live show was great. I mean, I thought that, you guys really kept it flowing, and you know, you had different shifts, and so I could kind of see a little bit of what you guys were doing kind of behind the scenes. I know you guys were spending a lot of time on the floor doing segments and things like that, and I thought that, you know, that was fantastic. Yeah, I thought that this year was really a breakthrough year for live streaming from the event. I mean, there was a lot of folks doing that this year. I mean, a lot of the, you know, CNET and Twit, and you know, and all of them were doing fantastic. So I thought that, I mean, you really didn't have to go to the show this year. You could actually just watch the live stream all day, and it's almost like you're walking the floor and going to the event. So it was actually, you know, it was really great. And from a podcast perspective, I think I had more content this year than the last 3 years. So
one thing that we noticed was that, of course, AOL was a big was in there big, helping TechCrunch. They had a beautiful set, probably $150,000 set with huge cameras, and the Panasonic had a live set, completely produced, everything being set off a teleprompter, nothing ad libbed whatsoever. I mean, it was they had grips and mic people, and you know, it was a full unionized production. So I just wonder how, you know, if you look through those, and here we are, I wouldn't say we're on the budget side, but we're definitely, we were in the budget seats and location. So we didn't have this fantastic, backdrop view. How did everybody in the volume, I guess we were looking at volume more than aesthetics. So how did we do from a volume perspective, or did the other live events keep clipping away through stuff pretty quick as well?
Well, I have to say, you know, from a how much content that was flowing into the feeds from an on-demand perspective, I think that the folks that did probably the most content during the actual show itself, as far as feeding, you know, videos to their audience, was probably Twit and Three were actually doing a really good job of getting up content almost in, you know, in a real time basis. So I think, I mean, so it kind of depends on one's strategy. Is your strategy to get up all your videos while the show's going on, which takes a lot of resources, or is it to do it like what you guys are doing, which is do live and then do all of your on-demand stuff, you know, over a long period of time after the show? And there's a valid point for doing it, you know, both ways. I think it just depends on what kind of resources that you bring to the table. So I think it's really interesting how that kind of split up this year, but I saw, you know, a few of the networks not really post all of their stuff to their podcast feed either. It was almost like they just posted just that day's stuff and not, you know, like the past days. So, you know, I think each of the content networks kind of had their own unique strategy to approach the show. And I thought it was really interesting this year.
What about the three-letter networks, your regular ABC, CNN coverage, TBS, Fox, any of those?
I would say that most of them kind of mostly ignored it. So, I think that most of the coverage and the best coverage was done by folks that are doing online-only stuff. So, you know, that's another interesting trend.
Yeah, it is kind of curious. And, you know, obviously we would love to have our stuff go up the same day, but, you know, how many more people would we need, guys? 10 more people to show that we're doing nothing but editing video and then have enough bandwidth to make it happen?
At least bandwidth's a real issue.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is.
But not to mention the amount of equipment that you have to get the throughput. I mean, that alone is problematic. Plus the bandwidth is problematic.
Yeah, I saw lots of these networks using those live streaming backpacks. I think like LiveU.
Yeah.
Stuff. You know, a lot of those guys would feed the videos back to their main studios, and that's where the post-production was being done.
So they were actually capturing the live stream images, not the recorded stuff off the backpack.
Yeah, exactly.
So then the quality definitely was not as high on the production side of it. I guess it really didn't matter, did it?
Yeah, I think it was more about trying to get, you know, live from the show floor, kind of walking the show floor. Like, I think Robert Scoble did an hour video where he walked from one end of the, you know, of CES to the other in one video.
Huh.
So, you know, there's a presentation method differential too compared to what we were doing and what some of those others were doing. And that is, they were 100% scripted. As Todd mentioned, the teleprompter, somebody had already written everything up. They were just reading. Here we were off the cuff, you know, in the trenches and talking turkey. And I think there's a big differential there in terms of what people really want.
Well, I think our coverage was more real too. You know, it's not, you know, like in new media, one of the big things about it was that you're more accessible to your audience. And I think the way we do it, it definitely makes us seem more accessible. And it's more genuine, you know, we don't cut out all the little mistakes and whatnot, you know, and we're not on a prompter or, you know, just that kind of thing.
One thing you haven't noticed for sure is you couldn't have walked up to the TechCrunch, Twit, or Panasonic booth and got on. You could not have, there's no way. They had this ring of, like this ring of security almost around people. And that was kind of my perspective from, you know, from people being able to have access. So they definitely, it was different in that perspective. Now, Leo and stuff weren't on a prompter. They were, you know, loose, you know, basically loose format just like us. But
I think we were an open opportunity. I mean, Andy and I were gracious enough to grant Leo an interview with us.
And I don't know if we'd have got on if we would have went to Leo's booth. You know, I think that
Would have gotten here if he had barbed wire in front of him.
Yeah.
No, but it kind of looked like he was trying to get away too.
Oh, he's trying was trying to get away from us.
Yes, he was, but he got caught.
Andy and I double teamed him, I think, on that. Remember Andy?
Well, it was nice of him to, you know, to come on headset for a few minutes and say hi. So,
what about revision 3? This is one of the first years I didn't see Patrick in evidence.
Oh, they were there. You can
see. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was there, and so was Veronica Belmont. Actually, I think about three or four of their shows were actually there.
When we taped the, what was that helmet, where I put a big helmet on me, it looked like a half a bowling ball. Veronica Belmont was sitting there watching us do that video at, I think that was Digital Experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. They definitely were on the move. They weren't stationary anywhere. That's for sure. So, anyway,
they did have a stationary booth, didn't they?
Well, they were using spaces that was up there by where MSNBC used to be, and that was all. That was so underutilized, that whole space. I was just biting my teeth because we could have been in there and utilized that space heavily.
In fact, I did one shoot from up there on the platform, and I actually I told Dave to swing the camera to the left because the right, I mean, it was just where NBC was in previous years.
Yeah,
was just nothing but a little jumble of tiny booths. It just was not what you would want to see from that vantage point.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, coming back to you, what did you, you know, what did you get out of the show? What did you think?
No, the entire experience is something that you honestly can't preconceive. It's beyond the scope of, I think, most people's imaginations if you haven't been through it. I got to agree with everybody. If I see one more iPhone cover, I'm going to puke. Sick of them. Matter of fact, I ripped mine off and just threw it. But anyway.
Where's all those iPhone covers I picked up? Oh, yeah, this one.
But, you know, I think there was only one real wow factor item for me, and the rest of everything else, I think we saw a lot of refinement on things. What really got me was pretty much the new Samsung OLED televisions in 4K displays were just absolutely breathtaking. And regardless of the 3D, which, you know, I'm really not a fan of, just the entire quality of the product almost looks better than real life. And, you know, how much definition do you have to go to before you cross that line of realism and fakeism? But a phenomenal product.
So Lou, you are watching. What was your thoughts?
Oh, you guys did a wonderful job. I couldn't stop watching. That's the problem. I actually was watching at work. I'm supposed to be watching surveillance monitors here, but I had you guys like right here. And
you were doing surveillance for us. So.
Oh, pretty much. Yeah, I promised I wasn't going to look a lot. You know, of course, I kept, you know. So, yeah, no, you guys did wonderful. It was a great thing.
So I guess we, you know, talking about the, you know, the work of the show, you know, the show is, it's, you know, I tell all the guys, it's, that's the fun part. The thing that sucks is coming back and editing, you know, and I just got all the masters copied off the TriCaster, the 1.7 terabytes of the master coverage. So now I have to start working on those. But the sheer volume of videos to process and then write blog posts on is extraordinary. You know, you think about it, and then to do those, you know, get the links and the images and everything right is a huge, huge, huge amount of work. So Jeffrey, we missed you there. What did you think was the best part of the show?
Well, let's see. There was a lot of great stuff at the show. when I think the biggest thing was just it's always finding that one vendor that gets kind of stuffed in the corner, and you go, wow, you've got a product that just completely blows people's socks off. Why aren't you in the front? And then or a vendor that this year they have that small booth, but you know that next year they're going to have the big booth. And how many years that we've done this have we seen a vendor go from a very small booth to a very big booth? That's the best part about going to CES.
Well, while we were gone and after we got back, there was lots of other stuff that was happening in the tech side. And of course, this past week has been a pretty big week on a tech news front, to the point of being quite extraordinary, actually. Came back with Jerry Yang resigning from Yahoo and what's going on with him and the reorganization of that board and the cleaning house. But more significantly was the SOPA / PIPA protest that took place on the 18th, which I feel was pretty successful, obviously, because they're now pulled those bills and they're going to go back and look at them again. But there's been some realization by the net. I think we could talk SOPA PIPA to death, but what I want to talk about specifically about this is there was a post last night written by by the folks over at Y Combinator, and I probably just pronounced that wrong, but he basically wrote a post that says, "Kill Hollywood." And he basically goes on to say that Hollywood has appeared to peak, and if we're an ordinary industry, it could look forward to a couple decades of peaceful decline, but this is not an ordinary industry. The people running it are so mean and politically connected that they could do a lot of damage to civil liberties and the world economy on the way down. It would therefore be a good thing if competitors hasten their demise. And he goes on to say that they're going to be focusing on funding startups that will compete with movie and TV. And he wants to eradicate these folks. And I was like, holy crap. I mean, this guy's declared war on Hollywood. So, you know, they are the ones that the MPAA, the RIAA, that have driven this odd-goffle legislation. Do you think it's time to declare war on Hollywood? And I guess we'll start here with Don, because you've been in the media business a long time. What do you think? Can we kill him, or is it even possible?
I'm all for the war. I think it's out of control. Don't even get me started on the RIAA. And also, I just read last night in the Arizona Republic, which is not the best newspaper in the world, but I didn't realize that Christopher Dodd, who I don't particularly care for in any way, shape, or form, is now, I believe, president or CEO of the motion picture industry. And boy, if you do any reading on this guy, he was one of the initial dudes behind, taxing the internet and getting it under, government control. And this guy's scary. And truth be known, he was asked behind closed doors not to run again because they had so many ethics violations. They were on their way to court, and this guy, because of who he knows and what he knows, was able to cut a deal. So he resigned quietly without any muss or fuss or public knowledge of what was going on for the moment. A month later, he's president of the motion picture industry behind all this stuff. So I think the cat's out of the hat, and I don't think they're ever going to be able to stop the downloading of movies illegally and MP3 files and so on and so forth. I'm not going to talk about the moral or ethical values or the copyright issues. I just think that they're not going to get this back in the hat. And, the fines and the legalities of this with the RIAA and motion picture industry are obscene. So that's just my two cents.
And Rob, you're kind of sitting on the other side of the fence, where you guys are trying to combine big media and small media. What's your thoughts on the? I don't know if you saw this post or not.
Yeah, I've been actually watching it really closely, and I think that there's kind of two ways of looking at this. I think that there is a certain amount of a problem around piracy. I think we all can agree that there's a problem here, and it's not necessarily all here in the U.S. It's a worldwide problem. But yet, on the other hand, I think there's a problem with it overreaching. I think that this legislation was overreaching its power to try and control that. And it's hard to really know what the real agenda is here, but it certainly is overreaching. And I think what needs to happen is that there may be some need to have some better legislation. But yet on the other hand, we all need to be really knowledgeable about what this legislation really says before we really go after it. So as this thing evolves, I think that there's a lot of people that really kind of follow the lead on this thing and don't really understand entirely what's being talked about that's in this bill. Believe me, I'm not in favor of it. I think that, you know, really any bill that's put out there that limits what can be done on the internet, I think is a bad thing. And I think that needs to be balanced with the needs of copyright holders that do have a real business and want to protect their property. And I think that there needs to be a balance here. And I also feel that what we have with the current copyright law is probably sufficient to do all that. So I would say that maybe we don't even need any new legislation. So it really depends on what this legislation actually says.
You know, and I look at this Y Combinator post, and you know, he's basically advocating things that we've been advocating for a long time. Apps, yeah. You know, going over the top, going around them, having accessibility and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, hey, look over here, Y Combinator. This is some stuff we're doing. You know, we're already been in this battle for 7 years, and we weren't necessarily trying to kill them, because that's, you know, that's a pretty big order, but at least coexist and have equal footing. And I think we've done that now. So, you know, they really want to take this to the next extreme by hastening the demise of the entertainment industry, specifically the movie and the major studios and so forth. So I think it's going to happen, but I don't think it's going to happen as fast as he wants it to happen. So, in looking at this mindset on these venture capitalists, they're going to start now investing in more companies that are trying to upset the apple cart here. Andy, you maybe ought to reach out to Y Combinator.
Yeah, maybe that would be the approach. Yeah, you know, one of the things that is impressive, though, and I go back again to that favorite book that I have, The Big Switch. You know, this ever since the sheet music guys got upset with the phonograph people ripping them off, this has been a favorite and recurring theme in the halls of Congress. And I think one of the cautionary tales is that, it appeared, you know, six senators totally reversed their position. You know, many people, including myself, wrote to their congressmen and senators and expressed their opinion. But, you know, hey, that's just ready for another round. You know, just sit quiet. Another 6 months, you'll have another piece of legislation that will come in, you know, new and improved. And I think the one of the things that's going to be hard is to keep people's energy level up and awareness that this isn't just a one-time thing.
Did you say that six congressmen or senators, or I didn't hear you, changed their minds in your state?
No, six. It was six senators actually reversed their position with respect to PIPA.
Because we had everyone here in Arizona, I think the five or six congressmen, I think all the senators too, all of them changed their mind after they saw the heat from the internet, which is interesting.
Oh yeah,
they felt the heat.
The whole thing is they're trying to protect the dying business model. It'd be like, you know, back, you know, when cars were invented, the buggy manufacturers getting all upset and wanting laws to protect their business. Well, the business is going to die, and that's what's going to happen with Hollywood. In their present business model, look at Louis C.K. He put out his stuff directly to his fans and made $1 million and went right around.
If you look, if you look at the, you know, what happened to Kodak here this past week with them filing bankruptcy, you know, the handwriting's on the wall because, you know, they did not adapt fast enough and go digital fast enough. And here you've got them trying, some of the entertainment groups trying to put some of their programming online, and they're finding out it's a much different business model. So, you know, you look at HBO. If you still are connected to your cable and you have HBO, HBO gets a large portion of your subscription fee that comes back to them. And, you know, I don't want HBO on my TV. I want HBO on my set-top box, but you can't buy it. So what happens is that it's not that we don't like the media. It's that we want to have it in the format we want it in. We don't want to have to be constrained in watching it in, you know, through our cable provider. And so the piracy is largely driven by their inability to make that programming available to me at a reasonable cost and in the format I want. That's exactly what happened to the record business and to the record store business. They did not adapt. So, you know, and another thing too, it ties back to advertising rates. You know, the cable providers don't have to meet any standard, whereas digital does, and the media buyers have gotten smarter on the digital purchases, so they understand they're not going to make as much money. So, you know, it's a combination of things. I understand their dilemma, but they've driven people to pirate. Steve, you know, are you still connected? Are you guys still hooked up to your cable box, or?
I'm not, but, you know, some of these organizations, folks, is they've had their bullying ways for so long that, you know, it's time that everybody stood up and said, enough's enough. And that's a part of the blackout. You know, a lot of those blackouts when it comes to things that happen through time don't work very well. But now we had very major internet presence from some of our biggest companies on the internet say no. And it's about time we actually put something in their face and say, you got to change your ways.
Yeah, I think though Andy's right, though. I think Andy's that they're just going to come in and sneak something in the middle of the night, and it's going to be a 2 o'clock in the morning bill passage when the rest of us are sleeping, and they're going to push one through. That's what I'm concerned about. So Jeffrey, you know, you're not only a content creator, but you also are an entertainer. You guys, you know, you work with a band, and obviously you don't want to see your stuff being ripped off. You know, what do you guys think about the whole, you know, from an entertainment standpoint, not a content creator?
Well, when it comes to creating original content, the music industry is pretty much just as shaken up. Yeah, I think actually the music industry has been shaken up earlier, and now the movie industry is starting to catch the power and figure it out, because a lot of musicians nowadays give away a lot of their stuff for free on the internet, and then they sell lots of albums because they do that. If the movie industry starts to realize that we're creating shows that have content that actually make people want to go see their content, then they'll start to realize that something like Soper or Pippa is not the way to go.
Yeah, it's interesting where the whole space is going. Hey, I want to lighten the mood here for a little bit, and then we'll come back to a serious topic. And I say lighten the mood, we'll do it for just a few seconds. Have you guys ever been on a street where it was so busy you had a very hard time getting through, and you wish you could just like kind of part the waters so you could have a fast beeline down a street? You guys ever wish you could do that?
Yeah, going out of South Hall to the parking.
All right, so I'm going to tell you a way that you'll be guaranteed to get people to move out of your way when you're walking down the sidewalk. Carry a bell for a bike. And when you're walking down the street, you ring the bell, people are going to move out of your way. I saw a YouTube video.
I didn't mean my ears there.
I saw a YouTube video.
Put those in the Ohana store.
Yeah, I saw a YouTube video where a Japanese guy was carrying one of these down the street, and he was ringing it when and people were jumping out of the way. So
were people getting their wallets ready to throw into the little in the bucket for the Salvation Army too? Or?
Oh, yeah.
That's like a 73 Cadillac force field moving down the freeway, and the Toyota's just moving out of the way.
But if you were walking on a sidewalk and you're talking with someone and you heard that, wouldn't you move to the side?
Well, of course. Yeah.
I don't know if it had worked in South Hall, but we'll have to try next year. All right. Well,
you asked to leave.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the government got all pissed off because of the Sopapeepa, you know, demonstration, and they basically brought out the nuclear weapon and took down Mega Upload, and of course that has been huge in the news. And did anybody use Mega Upload for a legitimate purposes, putting up legitimate media like Dropbox or something like that? And, you know, what are you guys' reactions to them taking down Mega Upload? They didn't need Sopapeepa. They just took it down. No due process, nothing. Just arrested them.
They're going to have to find out, in fact, if the owners of that truly knew that it was being utilized for illegal content. And that's the legal aspect of it. But I've used it for dropping large files within my business, and it was great for that. But as we know, the privacy behind the scenes is something that is certainly not going to be tallied with.
They definitely had, if you read through some of the indictment, they had some emails that were pretty damning. But, you know, where one drops, another one will pop up. But did you guys see some of the extravagant cars and properties? Those guys were in the wrong business, fellas. But, of course, we're not behind bars either. So Lou, did you follow the Mega Upload stuff at all? And you
know, no, I had no idea. I'm looking at it right now.
So who here amongst us has been is versed on this?
If you guys I just want to make a comment about it, is that if you think about it in the context of SOPA, I think it kind of maybe proves the point that maybe we don't need new legislation.
That's true. But you know, I think the way they, you know, here's the thing. Imagine yourself running a website, whatever business it may be, and the federal government just coming in and taking it down. And, you know, some of these guys never, other takedowns, people were not arrested. They just took the sites without any due process. And it took one site that was illegitimately taken down a year to get their site back. You know, should there not be, shouldn't you have your day in court? Shouldn't you be able to, you know, if you're a U.S. citizen and it's your site, should you not say, you get your indictment, you go in and you hire a lawyer and you prove that you're not guilty. It's just like you're guilty and you have to be proven innocent, isn't it? That's the thing that pisses me off.
We're moving away from that just in general. I think a lot of the laws, I don't know how many you're aware that I think it was December 31st, Obama signed a lot of legislation that basically they can declare anybody a terrorist and we don't have due process. So I think the issue really is more, you know, due process, whether it's for the internet or they're taking down your site or just, you know, labeling you a terrorist or whatever. And I think due process is starting to itself to be in jeopardy. And to me, it's very scary. Very scary.
No, Andy.
There's that Mega Upload right there.
Yeah, Andy brought up this site. It says, this domain associated with this website, megaupload.com, has been seized pursuant to an order issued by U.S. District Court. Federal grand jury has indicted several individuals and he's allegedly involved in an operation of MegaUpload.com related website, charging them with the following federal crimes: conspiracy to commit racketeering, conspiracy to commit copyright infringement, conspiracy to commit money laundering, and criminal copyright infringement. So that big one there is that racketeering one. If they can't catch you on one thing, they catch you on racketeering. That's kind of a catch-all charge that they get everyone on. But, you know,
there's something. It's this that's missing something that I figure is also happening. Andy's IP has just been logged.
That's right. For going to that website.
I wouldn't doubt it.
No.
And here's we gotta show Andy's reaction. Oh, and here's another thing. Think about this. If you're using Mega Upload legitimately, okay, you're backing up your computer to Megaload Upload legitimately. Who has all your computer files now?
The government.
Uncle Sam has your private documents in their possession.
Yep. I gotta wonder who had it before.
Well, that's true too. But you're now guilty by association. I'll be honest. I canceled my USenet and I canceled my Dropbox account. I can't.
This could be something that impacts a large majority of cloud type services.
No, that's why I always, I just did a show yesterday on the Pogo plug, the new Series 4, not that they're any different than the other Pogo plugs, but they're more feature-rich, but I always like the cloud, but I like my own cloud, so I know where it's going. I mean, I hate putting my information in someone else's hands for whatever reason. I mean, someone could hack the site and take it away, and, you know, it's not a fault of the company, although they lack security, but it happens. It happens every day of the week.
You know, I've having, you know, with the prior military experience and having had a security clearance before, I've had a anal probe run quite a distance looking at my entire lifestyle, finances, everything that I do. And, you know, I did that by choice. And I signed a piece of paper saying, yes, you can look at me. You can look at what I've done, what I've said. You know, basically allowed Uncle Sam to come in and make sure that the money that was in my bank account wasn't acquired in a way that would bring discredit upon the government or make me susceptible to having someone, you know, blackmail me. So, you know, from that perspective, you know, I chose to do that, you know, and I signed a piece of paper allowing them to do that. When it comes to my business stuff, you know, if they want my business stuff, they're going to have to kick the door in and come get it, I guess. And if they, you know, if that's the case, then that's the case. But at least then it's not in this aggregate of data with, you know, 150,000 other people and intermixed with porn or whoever knows what else is on that, on those servers. So does this give anyone else pause on having stuff stored in the cloud?
Well, in this case, I think I really wonder if this is not as much of what was in the cloud as to what they were doing behind the scenes.
I'm sure that
as a business. So I don't know. To me, I'll still have a Dropbox account. I mean, if somebody wants to hack into my Dropbox account, go for it. I don't have much on there. If somebody wants to hack into what I send on USenet, go ahead. I mean, it's going to be public in 24 hours anyway, so I don't have any problems with something like that because I don't send pornography through the channels. I do not put anything hate related onto my Dropbox or my iCloud or anything like that. So go for it. To hack my accounts. You get nothing.
Jeffrey just emails us that porn.
Email the porn. That's.
But, you know, I guess the point is I think people are using Mega Upload and these other sites for much more deeper purposes. They're using it for businesses, reporters sharing documents, all that stuff. So I was waiting for a reporter to say our very top secret report we're doing on certain senator is shared on Mega Upload. And now you have to, you know, from a reporter standpoint, you have to get that data off there. I don't know. Maybe I've overreacted. And Rob, it comes back to what you said earlier that there needs to be some. Well, I think the current enforcement's good, but do you think the Mega Upload stuff, there's an abuse there? Or was the government. Obviously, the government feels they're within their right to do what they did.
Yeah, I don't really see a huge difference from my understanding of the SOPA law from what we're seeing with the Mega Upload thing. I thought this was pretty much exactly what they would do. They would basically shut down the entire website.
Well, they were doing was messing with the DNS system in SOPA or PIPA. And
I think with the SOPA law, it kind of goes to a new level, right? They're trying to actually take one step further and have some other additional legislation that gives them more powers to go after people maybe that are not doing it at the scale that Mega Upload maybe was doing it.
Well, it goes beyond that, Rob. The SOPA PIPA part would be if I, as a rights holder, found something, I would not have to go through due process. I could do essentially similar to a DMCA takedown where I could have a domain seized and redirected to my site.
Yeah, it's in the reverse.
It's in the, yeah.
It's a reverse DMCA takedown is what you get.
Right. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's not, we're not asking you to take it down. We're going to take you down because we can.
And just, you know, remove you on the fly. So anyway, the, you know, and the next question is everyone, you know, what do you think there's going to be fallout? Because as soon as Mega Upload was taken down, Anonymous came in behind and just, I mean, wreaked havoc. They went after every, they went after White House. They went after FBI. They went after DOJ. They went after all the media companies with a massive denial of service attack that was very effective. So I'm thinking, okay, here we've gained some karma on the SOPA people blackout day. Mega Upload is taken down by the feds, maybe in, say, ha, 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 we can do this anyway. And then Anonymous comes in and does an attack. So are we back at a level playing field again?
Well, I'm waiting for super, super mega load to come up in a week or two. I mean, that's
well, seeing the money that they made and it's been revealed, I don't think it's going to be too far behind because somebody, yeah, someone's going to say, well, let's, you know, the guy donated $500,000 to Auckland's New Year Eve celebration for their fireworks. And, you know, the guy's flying around with Playboy bunnies and, you know, he's had more Mercedes than, the Mercedes showroom did. And it just, it's amazing what this guy had, $80 million or something like that. He had personally acquired, but,
so know, what was the business model? What was the business model there?
Oh, you pay for an upload account, just like you do on these other upload sites.
Oh, you pay for the account.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. I didn't realize, you know, what was involved there.
It's,
oh, yeah.
It's the same as Dropbox. Exactly. Or you send it. You pay them for some storage, and you put your media up there, and you don't you provide links to your friends to go download.
Well, what's the, you know, is the government going to go after Dropbox next?
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I got a feeling RapidShare is getting a little nervous.
Are they a little bit on the leery side too? Has it got a reputation?
I would imagine. Or how about laying things like MediaFire? Same thing.
Yeah, but how are you going to differentiate between, you know, what's being transmitted or sent, uploaded, downloaded that's quote legal or illegal, and how the government's obviously monitoring these things to find out what's legal and what's not illegal, and you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, you know, like Jeff said, what he uploads is you know, normal, regular stuff. And, you know, interesting point. He doesn't care if it's hacked because there's nothing that's in there. On the other hand, people are paying for this service. You know, if I do a video and, you know, I have upload it to a client, you know, these types of functional drop boxes and those types of services they perform a valuable purpose for legitimate people. So there's a fine line there. I'm not sure, you know, it's unfortunate that if I'm using it and Jeff is using it for you know, normal, you know, everyday use purposes, you're kind of sucked in with that. And, you know, you spent money on an account. Now you're out that money and you're out that service. They're all not bad. I mean, they do have a function in this electronic digital world. I mean, it's a necessary way to move files, especially today with the big, you know, with the size of the digital files that you need these services. The other thing that's interesting is that if you go to a thing like put up an FTP server or, you know, or use the, you know, like put up a big Drobo box or whatever, even Pogo Plug. I mean, there's another vehicle that you're in control of your own cloud up and down. You give your client a password, username, and they're in, and you're not worrying about the government because they're not watching you. Fine line there.
The biggest problem with Mega Upload was the fact that the one part where they basically were given copyright takedown notices and they decided not to go and adhere to it.
Well, they were taking them down, but they weren't taking them down at the rate that they were coming in. They were like, yeah. Time Warner got 5,000 a day or something like that.
Yeah. So, could Dropbox see something like that? It's very possible. However, on the other hand, the public doesn't really see what's going through Dropbox. It's really just a question of if somebody spots it on Dropbox's part or another part.
if you look at RapidShare, getting back to RapidShare or FileSonic, FileServe, I mean, those services, you pay for an account, they're very economical. But supposedly the government's not seeing that because it's on a private server and it's basically wrapped and encoded, and you don't know what's on those things. I mean, if you label it, with the name of a first run movie, probably get a good idea of what's on there. But for the most part, the RapidShare services and all those services really should be undetectable in theory. Obviously, we know that you can get beyond that, but they're cracking down just so loosely that, I don't know, again, you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater. I think they serve a valuable purpose. Certainly for me, to get up video and down video, those things are great.
What they did see, as soon as Mega Upload went down, all the competitors' bandwidths went up because people were shifting. So what's the next target? We'll have to see.
Yeah, it's like a whack-a-mole scenario, right? Is that what we're kind of going to get caught up in here?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about, Rob, and that's why I'm just kind of like, well, I'll just use my own FTP site from now on, and I know that it's legitimate material, and there's nothing else up there that can get in trouble, and I won't have my user account associated with some service that may get pulled offline, and you end up in some database somewhere as a user of one of these services. Next thing you know, they're tracking your IPs, and it's there's all this slippery slope going on. I think anything you say or do on the internet, obviously you just be prepared. It's one of those things where it's free speech is free speech, but not necessarily going to keep you out of jail. Let's move topics here. Unless anyone has anything to add on that.
The other thing I would say is, the role, the digital role, that it doesn't exist until it's in three places, it's still actually a pretty good one.
Say that again, Andy.
If you got a video file,
yeah,
it doesn't exist until it's in three places.
All right, what are those three places?
But it's up to you. Yeah, maybe it's on a TriCaster on your server, and then on Amazon.
You're speaking from a backup perspective.
Yeah. And that if you only have it at two places, you're at risk.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
Now, what about services like Carbonite or Mosey and that kind of thing? That's probably not the same thing, huh?
Well, now you can, if you have a Carbonite account or even a Mosey, I don't know about I don't think on Mosey. I know on Carbonite you can provide a link to someone or something. You can log in and get an account or get a file. But, those are more personal backups. So I'm sure if you are under the scrutiny of Uncle Sam, that's probably one of the things they're going to look at, is where you have your media backed up, and why come into the house and bust the door down when they can just get a copy off of Carbonite, or digital, or one of the other storage services.
I bet you there is some something in the end user license agreements that says that in Carbonite's case and Mosey's case, that they have the right to look at your backup information if there's anything questionable on their servers.
I'm sure there is.
Encrypted up and down, that they can't see it.
They what?
I thought that was encrypted up and down.
Mosey's is
encrypted, so you can pass it to them without anybody being able to access it. But once it gets on their servers, they should, I have a feeling they have a right, in the end user license agreement. I haven't really scoured through both of them, but I bet you there's something in there that says once it's on their servers, that they can take a look at the content to make sure that you're not doing anything hateful or
that's
wrong.
Scary stuff to me. That's real scary.
On Mosey, I'm pretty sure it's 128-bit encryption. I think it's encrypted on their server. I think that's one of their big selling points.
Not encrypted for transmission, but encrypted in storage itself, huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's encrypted in storage. I've got their talking points. I'll load it up and look, because I know it's in there.
I thought that it was encrypted. If no one could see it, it's encrypted. But Jeff brings up a good point. Could you imagine if they have the right to go in there? And what happens is, in theory, everything's okay, but you get someone who is a disgruntled employee and decides to take a peek at your records and sees, your taxes, your social security number, all that stuff, and all of a sudden you have an identity theft situation, because a lot of people who back up their computer have that information there and they feel it's encrypted. So, yeah. You know, who knows whose hands it's getting into.
Here's one of the differences, and that is you can legally make a backup of your content to include those kinds of information and in movies or whatever, that's your legal right. It's when things become a crime, and in Mega Upload's case, the government has decided there's a crime that has been committed, which is piracy. And so I think there's a difference there between what Megaload and others are doing in terms of a crime versus own personal backup.
Yeah, I think you're right. Looking through the Mosey talking points here, let me see.
I'm just looking here as well. I don't see anything for, you know, in possession of a warrant or anything of that nature.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they were, one of their things was the security of the files on site too, that they were talking big about it. Anyway, let's go ahead and let's talk about having a Kodak moment. Is Kodak's days done? You know, Andy, you lived in Rochester. You know, does this bankruptcy filing comes as a surprise?
You know, that was in the late 70s, and the census people would come around. They just want to know what building you worked in. They didn't even know. They just kind of made the assumption. You were either at Xerox or Kodak or Bosch & Lomb.
But Kodak is trying to restructure now. And obviously their film business is not big. You know, Mike, you ran these big presses and probably dealt with a lot of Kodak product. You know, what's your thought on that?
Oh, yeah. I ran that Next Press there for a while. That's that thing that they were calling a photo printer, but it's really a production press. And I went to Rochester for training probably 6 years ago, maybe. And parts of Rochester is a ghost town. I mean, all these film factories and you know, and imagine what the, you know, the ground must be like around there. But yeah, as far as their business model, I think, you know, they're printing products and, you know, like the Next Press and their copy machines and that kind of thing is doing all right. Their digital cameras are doing okay. I think the problem they have is they have too much legacy. What do you call it? You know, like retirees that they've got to pay for. They've got, you know, all this infrastructure that's sitting there empty that they can't get rid of. And I think that's probably one of their major problems.
Well, they're definitely going to.
I don't think that the company is going to really go away. I just think this, you know, I think that the restructuring is going to get rid of a lot of that dead weight, you know. I totally agree with you. I think that's what's going to happen. And because clearly Kodak has been making digital cameras and digital video cameras and things like that. And I just think they're going to just focus on that going forward.
Yeah. They're saying here, the business reorganization is intended to bolster liquidity in the U.S. and abroad, monetize non-strategic intellectual property, and resolve legacy liabilities, enable the company to focus on its valuable business line. So, yeah, and get rid of all this stuff.
That's one big company. I mean, I, you know, working in the printing industry, I probably know 30 people that work for Kodak in Michigan in the field.
That still do?
That's just one state.
Huh.
You know, they're doing, you know, support and sales and, you know, supporting the equipment and stuff. So, I mean, that's, they've got a pretty big workforce.
Yep.
Just in that product.
Yeah. And
I don't know. There is another factor, and that is that Kodak has been in films for how many years now? I'm guessing that they're going to get some sort of residuals from films being played for the last 70 years, so there's still money coming in. It's just not coming into those certain areas.
Well, they've got a huge patent war chest too that they're going to use as well to help you know, monetize as well.
Yeah,
Kodak is also a really valuable brand, I think, going forward too.
Yeah, it's a name that everyone knows, that's for sure. You can go anywhere in the world and you'll see Kodak products.
Yeah,
if you just like get rid of those pesky facilities, employees, and retirees, you know, they've got a pretty good thing going.
Yeah. Yeah. Throw them to the curb and, you know, wipe out their retirement plans and everything else. You know, lovely. That's who
just
gets
like Polaroid and some of these other companies. Yeah. They, you know, they just wait too long to reinvent themselves. And then they find themselves in this ditch and they've got to go through this legal process to get them out.
Yeah. That's the same thing the film industry is starting down as we were talking about before.
But isn't you know, they, has it most? Not, go ahead, Mike.
I'm just saying they're not switching their business plan soon enough, and that's going to take them down. And you know that's what happened with Kodak, and it's happened with other big companies. And then you got other you know like some of the automotive companies that are getting it right early enough to keep them out of hot water.
Is someone building a doghouse or something? I keep hearing bang, 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 bang.
So all right. You could say the same thing about the U.S. government. I mean, I think are we gonna have to see them go into Chapter 11 before we'll see some changes?
I think we're already there.
Hey, Rob. You know they just keep the printing press cranking. That's all they got to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Hey, you know, I tell you a story. I was years and years ago. This is probably 10 plus years ago. I was in Thailand and hanging out in the bars and stuff. And I had this friend and she was from Laos. And she was telling me how that in Laos, when they had this hyperinflation, they would to go to the grocery store, they would need a bushel bag, you know, a big bag that was full of money. Because the paper was essentially worthless and you'd have to have millions of whatever their denomination was just to buy groceries. And, the currency got so hyper overinflated. The government had printed so much money that people were refusing to take, the currency in Laos. So what they ended up doing was reverted to taking the dollar. So, you know, everything in Laos was being traded by dollars, not by their local currency. So, the question is, will our dollars be worth, you know, basically using it to, as valuable as toilet paper at some time? Or are we going to be, you know, what's the preferred?
Todd, if you got any excess there that you're concerned about, send them to, you know, the P.O. box.
Well, you know, let's be honest. If they keep printing money, that's what it's going to be worth. You know, that's the end result.
The question is, it double ply or is it single ply?
Single ply, of course. It is cloth, so you could reuse it and rewash it. You know, that you don't even have to dispose of it. Yeah, that's gross. So let's talk about AT&T retooling their data plans. 300 megs for $20, 3 gigs for $30, 5 gigs for $50. They're bound and determined to rape us, aren't they?
I'm still on unlimited plan.
Yeah, I think I'm still on a dumb phone.
I'm on unlimited.
It seems like they go through this process like every 3-4 months. I don't know.
Yeah, they just got to shake.
Got to boost their earnings.
Well, you know, they couldn't buy T-Mobile, so now they have to, you know, make more money so they can, you know, start building their infrastructure out.
What's going to happen to T-Mobile? Are they going to be able to survive on their own?
I hope so. They've got great plans at great prices.
Well, AT&T's paying for part of T-Mobile to bring people in so they can have a better coverage in T-Mobile. And they've got a relationship back and forth, and I wouldn't be surprised in about 2-3 T-Mobile makes another, or I'm sorry, AT&T makes another run at T-Mobile.
All right, guys, last article I've got for today in my little stack here. 20,000 education iPad apps developed, 1.5 million device in use at schools. They made their big iTunes U announcement earlier in the week. I think this is a pretty big deal. Apple definitely wants to bring textbooks digitally, and I don't think they're going to be able to maintain the $14.99 and below price point for college textbooks. But is this a good thing?
You know, something has to change from a student perspective in the rising costs of education. When we're looking at the average textbook at what running $150.
Yep.
In the various, you know, processes and procedures that go on to maintain a good education today in the university system, something has to be done. And if they can come in and have a viable asset and a good pricing, I think they've got to work.
You know, they raise.
I took a couple of college classes earlier this year, well, late last year, actually. And yeah, my books were $250. The tuition wasn't much more than that, you know, at the community college. And, you know, it's, you know, if you could get a $14 alternative, that'd be great. But I can't imagine that that's going to last.
You know, looking at, you know, the textbooks that I was buying when I was going to Emory Riddle, you know, it's just insane. And, you know, then you would, okay, I would be very careful. I wouldn't use a highlighter in them. I was, you know, taking care of them. And, you know, you take them, you sell them back, and they give you, you know, 10 cents on the dollar, and then they resell them at a high price. It's just, it's a huge racket. It really is. And they release a new edition every year, and I think they change three words, but that's the one that they want you to use. So the, it, you know, forces people to not get too many. Well, it what it does is it keeps fewer books in the ecosystem that are, they can be used. So it's just, it's a huge racket.
And for high schools, that each state has a different version of every textbook. Yeah. You know, so if you're in Texas, you have to have one approved by the Texas education system. And, you know, and each state's different. So when you go to Apple, I looked at those for the high school, and they say core edition, which means it's not approved by any state. For, you know, say a high school math book.
Well, Texas is the dominant force in determining what textbooks look like. Most states adopt the Texas model, but not all, which is interesting. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting what they were doing with iTunes U and some of the stuff there that they announced with the new iBook store and so forth. What did you guys see this week? Anything that I missed that was pretty hot? I think those
are. I was trying to think. I cannot think of the name of the product, but it was basically an iPad app that LG has teamed up with. LG's, they have the most marvelous phrase. They were talking about digital television. Control of television is not to take a device like this and try to stab something on the screen, but the tablet is the far more natural way to control the TV. And LG apparently is definitely going in that direction. And they, here's a TV manufacturer that's incorporating tablets as a part of their whole ecosystem on purpose, as opposed to having it as an add-on at the end. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I didn't hear about that one. That's a good one.
I'll have to. It was one of the Flipboard things that I actually saw there on the iPad.
Did you guys get your Netflix lawsuit letters?
No, I did not.
I got a letter that's saying that there's a class action lawsuit on Netflix for the DVD rental side, and the abomination from the last 6 months. In fact, the CMO just stepped down from Netflix.
Ooh,
I think that was.
Well, they, you know, if you sign up for that class action suit, you get your $2.49 when it's settled.
Yeah, that's $2.49 more cents than I had. So, yeah,
that's true.
And Todd and I at CES met an individual that has a great title, the Chief Gadget Officer.
Which actually, we've got a new Chief Gadget Officer at the Gadget Professor show, don't we, Don?
Yes, we. We made that decision.
We appointed him a CGO right there on the show floor. So everyone, if you want to just use the Don's short title, CGO, Chief Gadget Officer.
I just want to call him the Don. That'd be cool.
The Don.
Well, guys, thanks for hanging out with me here this Saturday morning. And I'm just going to say, everyone, get your damn videos edited. Get busy. We got a lot of stuff to get online. And I'm going to spend the majority of the rest of today doing nothing but editing videos. So I will be cranking them out here. But
I'll have four or five up to you today by the end of the day.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
As soon as I get some material here, I'll be working on it.
Yeah, I'm trying to get you some stuff copied there, Mike. So hopefully I'll be able to get you something FedEx Monday.
Yeah. You can do my videos, Mike, if you want.
Send them up.
So,
by the way, not to interrupt, but I must, since you know a lot of us are online, I must commend everybody for, I thought, an outstanding job at CES. I was very impressed and enjoyed thoroughly meeting and working with everybody. And I know Mike, Wildman Mike, feels the same way. So I just want to thank everybody. I thought it was extraordinarily well done. And I'm proud of all you guys, really.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, Don. And I will tell you that all of the gear is back safe. I don't think we had any wreckage of any gear this year, which is extraordinary considering how much stuff we had out there. Extraordinary will be the FedEx bill, too. I haven't tallied that up. So
you got any way to roll that one piece of video that got sent to you this morning?
Oh, yeah. Hang on a second here. You guys will have to watch the stream. I don't think I can actually... I don't know if I can pipe this.
Could you punch it to YouTube and then play it through Google Plus?
Let me see what I got here. Let me try this. I don't know if I can do this or not because I'm using IVGA. If you guys watch this, I don't know if you'll hear her either. Let me see here. How can I? I don't think I can do that. Courtney's got a video for us. She's at some cabin or something.
Potato Creek, you know, in the middle of all this.
Hang on, Andy. She's talking. All right, so I put it back up where she talked to the people on the live stream. I didn't have a way to patch it in. What was she saying?
She was just saying in a nice way she had a better offer than hanging out with us, but but she did at the end. She pulled together the snowball and was being kind to the cameraman. But she's with us in spirit, but not much more than that.
You let her go on vacation when there is about 80 videos to be edited. There's no vacations allowed until videos are all up and online.
I'll make a note of that for next year.
All right, guys. Thanks. Of course, Steve, where can I find you?
Steve, Ways of Tech Podcast over at netcaststudio.com. And thanks, everybody, for a great CES.
Rob, how about you? Where they can find you at?
Twitter and Rob Greenlee. And then I've got a couple of websites out there, robgreenlee.com and webtalkradio.com.
And Mike,
check out those.
And I'm over at geekofthenorth.com, among other places.
And I think Lou's showing us where they can find him. Find him at Lou Trek Show. Go ahead, Lou.
LouTrekShow.com.
So if you're a Trekkie, that's where to go. Jeffrey?
Everything Geekazine, Twitter Geekazine, geekazine.com. Got a brand new show called iPad 365 where we review an app a day to keep your iPad in play.
And Don?
The Gadget Professor. I'm there.
And Andy, we know where we can find you, but where's some, just for clarity?
Oh, for clarity, you can find me at sdrnews.com. And Twitter is AXMC. And then, of course, at RVNN TV.
Of course, you can find me at geeknewscentral.com. And, of course, you can tweet me at Geek News. That's probably the best way. Geeknewscentral.com is the website. Hey, we're going to bring the recording down here, but if everyone will stay on for just a second, I got a couple of favors to ask. But everyone that's been hanging out with us, this has been the Saturday Morning Tech Show at geeknewscentral.com. Come over, check us out. And I want to thank everyone for getting up early or hanging out mid-afternoon with us to do Saturday Morning Tech. Lots of great more content coming to you from here at Geek News Central.